Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her website's jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
Danielle, do equities bottom when yield curves are inverted?
Yeah, so everyone's been talking about the fact that most of the treasury yield curves in the world are deeply inverted and have been for at least the last 7 months. And that has always been a predictor or a preceding recessions in the economies where it shows up by a period of many months typically, but it is a common precursor. So the reality though is that equities typically do not make a stock market bottom until not just when the yield curve is inverted. That's not the signal. The signal is after the economy goes into recession and central banks then respond with rate cuts finally after hiking really extremely aggressively in 2022. Once they move to rate cuts, they drop the front end, which is the part of the rates that they have control over, the overnight rate, the very short money. They drop those rates and that ultimately steepens the yield curve back to positive sloping, right? So when they cut short rates, they fall below long-term treasury yields and you've got this upward sloping curve. That's that rapid re-steepening ultimately coincides with the bottom in stock markets. So, you know, here we have this massive short coloring rally that's happened in January where we've seen, you know, the strongest start to a calendar year in a long time. Especially last week, for example, when the most shorted stocks, Goldman Sachs has the most shorted stock basket, gained 16% last week alone. So you saw this big leap, and that's got a lot of people, talking very excitedly about the fact that they think we're into the next bull market, and that, you know, we should see gains for equities because we had this negative year in 2022. And you see a lot of stuff out on the airwaves and material being published now about, you know, well, you don't get back-to-back negative years in equities and this sort of stuff. Actually, that's nonsense because we saw in past cycles like 73, 74 was, you know, the worst. It's actually very similar. I think I've mentioned that before. There's a lot of similarities in that particular cycle to now, but you certainly had two back-to-back negative 25% declines in the stock market. And at the same time, that's when, you know, the yield curve was extremely inverted coming into that recession. And then the steepening coincided with finally the bear market bottom. So I think it's important to understand that this inversion of all these curves has happened globally. Actually, that's never happened to the extent that we've seen it this cycle. So it is not just a North American phenomenon, but it's all of the major economies. And typically when you get, like I said, this degree of, for example, the 2-10 curve inversion between the 2-year and the 10-year treasury government bond, you get, whenever you have had 50% of global curves in that area in inversions, you get the onset of recession. And in the end of 21, we had 90% of the world's, curves inverted. So that's really this, as I say, extremely global phenomenon. And it is the re-steepening part we still have to wait for now. And the U.S. 2 and 10 Treasury yield yesterday closed just this week closed at negative 71 basis points. So we're still way off in terms of any kind of normalcy or upward sloping trend. And the other really important thing to keep in mind is that we haven't, as I mentioned, we had this rapid rate shock, which caused, a leap in borrowing costs for those floating rate debts and things that were coming up for renewal in 2022. A lot of those loans are not going to come up for renewal until this year and next year. So the fact that these hikes that have happened take so long to filter through is something that confuses a lot of people. But the other factor that I think we're facing in 23, which has not yet been discounted by financial markets, certainly not by stocks, is, as I've explained before, there is this, right now the S&P earnings forecast is for a 9% growth rate in earnings in 23. If all of these indicators that have never been incorrectly forecasting a recession in the past, and they are suggesting that we're in or already in or heading into recession in 23, if they're consistently accurate this time, then that suggests that we're going to see an earnings decline of at least 20%. That's typically what happens during recession. So as I say, equities are currently whistling past that graveyard, expecting that we're going to have growth in earnings. So that's the first problem for equity prices. The other thing for corporate debt prices is that the high yield or high risk triple B and less corporate debt, 40% of Russell 2000 small cap companies that make up that index were actually unprofitable companies in 2022, and that was with rates still relatively low. So you have this phenomenon now where high yields, the yields that people are willing to lend money to these unprofitable companies or these high-risk companies, during the period of ultra-low rates, people were giving money hand over fist just for any yield at all, and yield spreads came down so that you weren't getting much compensation for all that risk. In the present phenomenon, we've seen the spread widening. So this is, again, something that happens in the latter part of the credit cycle, and before you get the stock market bottom, you get this widening in spreads between corporate debt yields, what they're paying in interest, over what a similar dated government treasury is paying in interest. Right now, that has widened in the last several months, but it's still about 412 basis points between, as I say, these high yield, riskier debts, interest rates that they're paying versus a treasury of a similar term. What we've noticed in the past is that corporate debt, typically the credit cycle or the price of corporate bonds typically bottoms with equities. So again, sometime in the future, not yet happened. And it bottoms when the yields that they're having to pay people to investors to give them money is about 800 basis points and higher above similar dated treasury. This is what people refer to as the risk spread. So you have to have this additional compensation. If you're going to be an investor in higher risk debt, you want to have the price lower. You want to be paying, 60 cents on the dollar, not 100 or 120 cents on the dollar, which people were doing in this period where indiscriminate flows were just going into any garbage asset just to get it, into something. So the corporate debt market follows the price of corporate high yield risk bonds follows the ISM manufacturing index. I put a chart of that on the blog this week, and that ISM index is now, contracting, and suggests that, again, that high yield spreads should follow over the months ahead and, again, go down to something like this spread of 800 basis points. So if you've got a government bond yielding 3%, for example, that suggests that the high yield debt index should be yielding something like 11%, and we're nowhere close to that at this point. So those two indicators really suggest both the credit quality spread and also the fact that the yield curves of the world remain steeply inverted all suggest we're nowhere near through this credit cycle yet, and we should be prepared for an ongoing bear market in 2023.
Are epic financial busts always a bad thing?
No, actually, again, it's always a question of where you sit when you come into them, because the opportunity that comes out of these cleansing processes, these cathartic events where weak players are taken out on stretchers, where things that had been, you know, highly sketchy to begin with are revealed as, you know, Ponzi schemes like the crypto stuff that's imploding right now, or cheats and liars and all the people that were hiding behind liquidity are revealed to be that. And suddenly you get some honesty and accountability introduced again to business models. So it can be a very cathartic, important, health-restoring event. But not if you come into it highly levered and holding the wrong things. So that's the two chapters of this story. And unfortunately, today we still have the asset allocation. I've mentioned this before, but I keep waiting for this capitulation to begin to take shape. You know, yesterday we had this massive sell-off, or on Wednesday of this week, a massive sell-off in the stock market, and it rolled back over. The S&P, for example, hit that 4,000 level again and rolled back over, closed below its 200-day moving average. On news that, you know, things like retail sales, we've had three consecutive quarters of declines now in retail sales, and we've had two successive months of negative production numbers. So we've really got this rollover in all kinds of spending in the economy. And the amazing thing is, even with the drops that have happened in assets to date and the pummeling that happened to portfolios in 2022, which was the most negative annual return since 2008, you've still got about 64% of retail portfolios allocated in stocks. And they have, you know, minimal bonds, primarily corporate debt. That, you know, unfortunately, most people don't understand how bonds work, and there's very little financial incentive on the product sales side to get people into, you know, government bonds. So everybody's trying to sell them this sort of sketchy corporate debt, with the most risk and the highest fees for the underwriters. So most portfolios don't have any fixed income to speak of in them. They're mostly allocated to stocks, and they have very low cash levels. And right now we see that coming into 23, they've still got this, you know, they were almost 70% allocated in stocks coming into the 2022 down cycle. They've lost a good whack of their money, you know, because prices have come off so sharply, but they're still sitting at about 64%. So that suggests that, you know, when I put a chart of that on the blog this week as well, going back to 1988, we can see that at market bottoms, the allocation to equities is typically around 40%. And that's because people lose so much of the value as the price comes down, and it's that crushing that also triggers things like margin loans and then forced selling at the bottom. So we've still got a very risk-exposed population coming into this 2023, where, as I say, there's no indication that we're at the bottom of the economic cycle yet, or that we're at the bottom of the credit cycle or of the securities markets in terms of corporate debt and equities.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, with dropping prices in Canada, the U.S., and China, is Tesla on the ropes?
Well, Tesla is actually the most profitable car maker by a landslide, by like $9,000 per car versus sort of $1,500 per car for Toyota. So every car maker in the world right now is struggling with, as I say, higher interest rates, which make it harder for people to buy cars, and also because people bought so many vehicles during the pandemic when credit was flowing and handouts were plentiful. And so there was a dearth of cars, and everyone was kind of in a panic to buy vehicles. So you really had this bringing forward future demand and absorbing it in the last couple of years. So now all the major car companies are noticing a downturn in terms of demand. They have mounting inventories. And the issue here is, you know, this is all classic cycle stuff. So, you know, who came into it the best prepared? Who came into it corporation-wise with the best cash reserves and the highest profit margins? And they're the ones who typically can weather this storm as the consumer retrenches. And the issue there is that, you know, who has the demand growth in the world? It's the electric car makers. What are the most inventory that people are holding on to? ICE car engines, right? The old internal combustion engines. So it's a compression that's happening in the goods markets all over the world. But the ones where, you know, again, when the consumer's under stress, and when they're looking to cut costs and they're looking to avoid high fuel costs and that sort of thing, the preference right now is definitely for people to go towards the EV market. So what sales are happening are growing most in that area, and we're seeing all used car prices come off. So in terms of Tesla, they have the most established business model and the most profit, so they are also cutting their prices, but they have more room to cut, so to speak. You know, if they have a $9,000 profit per car, obviously have greater room there before they're unprofitable, whereas the other car makers have much smaller margins. So there's a bunch of things happening there, but ultimately, you know, the down cycle is significant in terms of the amount of units being sold, and it's likely to continue to be weak for 2023 at the very least. On the upside, prices are coming down, both on the electric models and as well as all the ICE inventory. Now, I posted a few things recently on the blog about the used car market because it has come off the most on record in the last year, but it's still remarkably some 43%. The average used car price is still 43% above where it was in December of 2019 pre-pandemic. So this is this, you know, metric that I've talked about in so many areas, whether it's housing, that, you know, the latest data from ECRI showed that that the national home prices had come off over 14% from the peak in Canada, as similar to the decline in used cars, actually, from the peak used car prices. But if you look to where we were in 2019, we're still miles above it, right? There's still very much excesses and bubble evidence left in the pricing structure of many assets, whether it's financial, housing, or, as I say, goods and services. So another thing is that, you know, the auto loans delinquent is up 26% year over year. So auto loans that haven't been paid in more than 2 months are now up 26% year over year. So that's another sign of stress in the consumer sector, but also just is part of the credit cycle where the defaults start to mount. We saw that all the major U.S. banks in their earnings in the last week have set aside massive, like more than $7 billion for bad debts or for defaults in their loan portfolio, and that's the most since we saw in the second quarter of 2020. So I expect more of that because the lenders were indiscriminate when rates were low and credit was flowing, and now we've got a massive contraction in the availability of credit worldwide, and that stems from all the quantitative tapering and tightening that central banks have been doing. So you've got this impulse of capital coming back out of the banking system and out of availability for loans, and that is also making it harder for people to pay their outstanding obligations. So you're getting this overall contraction, and it's hitting earnings because when banks set aside loan loss provisions, it takes their earnings down, and so we've seen a lot of declines also in the banking sector in terms of the price of the shares. So it's really all connected.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her website's jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at @HowStreet. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.